Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hello, this is Let's Talk About Myths, baby, and I'm Liv, the woman whose voice you're always listening to. Thank you all for tuning in. A quick request of you, right up at the top this time. I usually say this at the end of the episode, but I'm saying it up front today. I would be eternally grateful if you would be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you can rate and review in Apple iTunes, amazing, that's the best. If not, please subscribe wherever you listen, and please tell your friends, share the love. You can also follow me on various social media locales, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. My name's @MythsBaby on all of them, but fair warning, I don't spend too much time on Facebook. I'm hoping to continue growing this podcast so that I have the resources to make it better, more thorough, and the like. Lately, it's been a bit stagnant, so do me a solid and help me out. It helps you too, because I could be able to make more wonderfully mythological content for you. And speaking of, today's episode will start what I hope to be an ongoing segment, so stay tuned at the end of the episode for the inaugural segment of Things the Western World Didn't Do First. Okay, that's enough of that. Now, you wonderful nerds, it's time again that we return to the one and only one of the most famous women of Greek mythology, the woman whose story is still being told in theaters around the world today, Medea. Where we last left our Colchian princess, she had made the grave mistake of trusting that asshat Jason. Oh, that guy. Medea's left her home, which fine, she wasn't a huge fan of anyway, but she's devoted herself to this strange Greek man who's promised her everything. He's promised to marry her and be her partner for the rest of their lives. He seems good on paper, but as we all know, and we will begin to see more and more, he's not. Jason and Medea left Colchis and got away from her father by killing her brother. They stopped by Circe, either Medea's sister or aunt, for purification of this dastardly deed. And finally, they've arrived back on the Greek mainland, where Medea is a foreigner, an Easterner. She's a barbarian in their eyes, someone who doesn't speak Greek, or if she's learning, she's still not fluent and definitely has an accent. A woman who looks different from the Greeks, her clothes, her customs. She is the other, and we know how people feel about the so-called other. Jason and Medea have arrived back in Iolcus, where this whole mess started. Peleus, the man who's taken over the throne of Iolcus, which rightly belongs to Jason, sent him on a quest that would surely take his life. Peleus requested Jason return with the golden fleece. Thanks to Medea, though, and only thanks to Medea, Jason didn't die on his quest, and he's returned to Peleus with the golden fleece. This is episode 66. Medea, see how she flies, witchy woman. Jason brings his new wife, the foreign Medea, home to Iolcus. He's found great success in his quest, he's returned with the famed Golden Fleece, and so the pair and the rest of the Argonauts are met with celebration by many of the Greeks upon their return. Who is this exotic woman Jason has brought with them, they think, and for now, she is young and beautiful, and Jason is proud of this prized woman. When he returns, though, and is met with all these happy Greeks, one person is missing from the crowd. Jason's father, Aeson. Now, I may have noted him as having already died in a previous episode, perhaps at the hands of Peleus. There are varying stories, and I'm not sure which one I've already said. Ah, Greek mythology. So please, just bear with me for now. In this, Aeson isn't dead. He's just grown very old and is certainly nearing his death. This version comes from Ovid, so, you know, I'm using it. Upon visiting his father, Jason sees how close it is to the end for him. But he has an idea. He knows the powers of his new wife, and he knows how to suck up to her. Does Jason believe now that he's a good, devoted husband? Does he really love Medea, at least for now? Or is Jason a manipulative fuck who always planned to do whatever the fuck he wants, no matter who he hurts? Jason speaks with Medea. He tells her that he knows he owes her everything, mainly his own life, and that she's already given everything to him. He can't possibly count the ways she's amazing. A savior, really. He flatters her, tells her just how incredible she is, how he knows it, how he knows he truly owes her absolutely everything. And where or who would he be without her? Medea, my beloved wife, he continues, could I ask one more thing of you? Could you use your magic, your incredible skilled magic, to take some of my own, my excessive youth, and give just a small portion to my father? Give him just a few years more. Jason's crying now as he asks her for this, and I'm trying to believe he's not just a master manipulator. Medea is taken with Jason's pleas. She sees his emotion, how much he loves his father. She wants to help, but not the way Jason wants. She scolds him for believing she even has that power, the power to take life from one person and give it to another. Quote, may Hecate forever hold me back from that, she says. I will try to extend Aeson's life, she reassures her loving husband, Jason, but not by taking life from you. I'll use my own magic, my very own magic, and nothing else to extend Aeson's life, provided Hecate helps me to realize these powers. It's a few days before the full moon when Jason asks this of Medea, or as Ovid says, quote, the moon was three nights short of rounding out its horns. The crescent moon being representative of the bull in that world. What a beautiful way of describing it. Ovid is the king. But Medea needs a full moon to do what she's planned, so she waits for it. And when the moon is full and shining its bright light down upon the earth, Medea sets out. She wears a loose robe, no shoes. Her hair is wild and unkempt, and she wanders through the dark trees in the silence of the night. The earth itself is silent for her. Trees do not stir, leaves beneath her feet do not crunch. The air is motionless as Medea walks at midnight under the full moon. Medea stretches her arms upward toward the full moon and the glittering stars. She turns around in a circle three times, and three times she pours fresh water over her head, and three times she wails up at the sky before kneeling on the ground. Medea calls out to the goddess of the night, the guardian of secret rites. She calls out to the stars and to Hecate herself. "You are aware of what we do," she calls to Hecate. "You shield and shelter our magic, our sorcery," she calls. And to Earth itself, she says, "You give us our magic herbs." Medea calls to the breezes, the wind, rivers, lakes, mountains, all the gods of the forests and the gods of the shades. She calls to them to be her allies, to help her. "My magic can make the sea turn still, or turn a still sea stormy. My magic can push and pull the clouds and the winds. My magic can move rocks, trees. It can make mountains shake." She continues on. It's beautiful. I can't retell it as much as I'd like to. Ovid is incredibly deferential to Medea, though. Here she is as powerful as you can ever imagine, and she knows it. She's telling the reader of her power, her extensive and unending power over nearly everything. I also should note that when she's calling to Hecate here, this isn't a version where Hecate is her mother, so she's calling to the more amorphous, primordial, underworld goddess Hecate. Finally, she asks for what she needs. Juices that can give life to the old man, bring back some of his years. Through this, she calls too for a chariot for herself, a chariot pulled by winged dragons, and she's given it. A chariot appears before Medea, not pulled by horses or even flying, flaming horses like the ones that pull her father's chariot of the sun. No, this chariot is pulled by bridled dragons with large, full wings, and they are immediately devoted to Medea. She climbs up onto the chariot, gives the dragons a loving stroke, and then they take off, pulling her through the sky. She flies over Thessaly, past the mountains of Ossa, Pelion, even Olympus itself. The dragons pull Medea's chariot across so much of Greece and Medea's own land until they find exactly what she's looking for, her special magical herbs. Medea flies with her dragons, collecting all she needs. Herbs from the riverside of all the famous rivers, those controlled by the most impressive of river gods. She plucks or cuts them from all around. For 9 days and 9 nights, Medea flies with her dragons, finding all the necessary ingredients, all to provide just a little extra life to Aeson, Jason's father. I'll say again that Jason doesn't deserve Medea. She's devoted. If she wants to help you, she will go to all lengths. It's just too bad she feels she should help Jason. After she's spent these 9 days and 9 nights flying everywhere imaginable on her dragon chariot, Medea returns to Iolcus. But before she returns home, she builds altars, still outside beneath the night sky. One is to Hecate, the other to Youth. She wreathes her altars in boughs of dark leaves. Next, she digs trenches nearby to catch the blood of the two black sheep that she then sacrifices. She spills wine on the blood in one spot, warm milk on the blood in another, and then she begins her spells. She calls upon the gods of the underworld, to Hades and to Persephone. She begs them not to call for Aeson's soul too quickly, to give him more time. Once she's convinced the gods of the dead, she gets Aeson himself and brings him outside. She puts him into a deep sleep, stretches him out on the grass beneath the moonlight. She tells everyone to leave or to look away. None are permitted to witness this sacred magic. Medea is left alone with Aeson, who is still fast asleep under his own spell. So she begins. Her hair is everywhere, like a bacchant, we're told, as she prepares. The altars are ablaze, and she circles them, with Aeson between. Medea soaks torches and blood and sets them on fire. Next, it's time to purify him. This she does 3 times with fire, 3 times with water, and another 3 with sulfur. While she's doing this, though, a potion is bubbling away. "Double, double, toil and trouble," she recites over the cauldron. Just kidding, that's Macbeth. Her potion is bubbling away in a pot. Inside is brewing all the ingredients she picked and cut from across the Greek world and beyond. Those she spent 9 days compiling, flowers, juices, seeds, even stones and sand, dirty, bloody wings of owls, the innards of a werewolf, the liver of an aged stag, the skin of Libyan snakes, the head and beak of a 90-year-old crow. All together bubbling away as Medea purifies the body of Aeson. Medea is such a fucking witch queen, I just can't even handle how badass and gross she is. Medea stirs her potion with a dried out old bough made of olive wood, as seems only right. She's careful to mix it well, getting all the good guts and nastiness from the bottom and mixing them up with the lighter, possibly less disgusting parts from the top. As the olive wood bough stirs the potion slowly, it first turns green and sprouts leaves. Then suddenly olives are growing from the lively branch in her hand. Medea smiles and continues stirring. Now, wherever the potion splatters onto the ground, flowers and grasses bloom as if freshly touched by spring. At this, Medea knows it's time. As soon as she sees this happening, she draws her sword from its sheath, because she wears a fucking sword at her side, and she slits Aeson's throat in one quick motion. Medea waits. She waits as Aeson's blood slowly drains from his body, and when it's done, when he's an empty shell, she begins to fill his veins with the potion. This concoction she's just produced with all its owl wings and werewolf guts. She feeds it into his body through his mouth and his wound. Slowly, as his body takes the potion in, he begins to change. His gray disappears from his hair and his beard, leaving his jet black hair behind. His pale gray skin is renewed, the wrinkles disappear. His limbs loosen with youthful energy, and before much time has passed at all, Aeson is reawakened and he feels fucking incredible. Holy shit, he probably said, but Ovid is too fancy to tell us that. He recognizes himself, but from so many years before. Up above, on Mount Olympus itself, Dionysus, Bacchus, watches what Medea has done. He is impressed, in awe, really, of Medea's work. He thinks of who he, too, could have Medea help with her youthful magic.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com, that's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
With Aeson's youth fulfilled, Medea and Jason turn their attention to Peleus, the man who's taken over the palace, taken over the kingship of Iolcus, who sent Jason on the doomed quest to begin with. This action by Medea has inspired them. Peleus, too, is very old and near death. Surely he, too, or his family, would want his youth to be renewed like Aeson. Medea and Jason pretend to have a fight. Medea flees their home, finding shelter with Peleus' daughters. The daughters take to Medea immediately. How could they not? She's pretty fucking incredible. I certainly would want to be friends with her, at least at this point in the story. Perhaps less so later. But right now, oh man, she's awesome. What I wouldn't give to bring over a bottle of red wine and have a girl's night with Medea. So Medea and the daughters become friends. She tells them about her life and her abilities. Particularly, Medea tells them about what she's just done, her greatest accomplishment, restoring Aeson's youth, giving him so many more years of life. Peleus is, of course, and I hope I've said this before, Aeson's brother. So not only are they of similar age, but the daughters hear the restoration of their uncle, and they immediately wish for Medea to do the same for their father. It should be easy, shouldn't it? Or at least as easy as it was for her to restore Aeson, which, fine, took a lot of time and steps, but still, she did it. Medea tells them about what she's done, and she tells them in a way that makes clear she could, and possibly would, do the same for their father. So the daughters beg and plead with Medea to do this for their father. They tell her that she can have whatever she wants in return, just name it, they say. Medea takes her time in her response. She doesn't answer right away. She pauses to weigh her options. But the daughters are so anxious. They've gotten this fixed in their minds, and my God, do they want this so, so desperately. Finally, Medea responds. I want to give you more confidence in my abilities, she tells them, surprising them because they were more than ready to just let her do it based on what she's told them about Aeson already. But now Medea tells them that she wants to prove herself first, that they can trust her with this gift. I'll transform your oldest ram into a lamb, she tells them, as an example of her abilities. They're eager, of course. They want her to prove herself. So they get hold of their oldest, shaggiest ram. So old is this poor animal. They pull and tug to get the animal to Medea. She begins right away. She pierces the ram through with her Thessalian knife. Very little blood flows. The animal's so old. Once it's emptied, though, she places the ram's body into a bronze tub. She adds her potion, her magical herbs. The potion reacts to the ram's body. It shrinks the animal's limbs, burns away its horns, and with that, its years. Finally, from inside the vat, a sound is heard, the bleating of a lamb. And so, in an instant, a cute little lamb leaps out of the vat and goes in search of a mom to drink some milk from. In utter shock, the daughters are now even more sure they can trust Medea to restore the youth of their father. They insist even more forcefully now and even more eagerly. Three days pass. Or as Ovid says in again the most goddamn beautiful way, quote, three times the sun had loosed its steeds into the Spanish sea. After these 3 days pass, and on the fourth night, Medea prepares. Medea sets up a cauldron to boil, and into it she adds various herbs that have no powers at all. She's making nothing but an unappetizing soup. And as she does, she performs her magic spell, this one being real, for it puts the king, Peleus, to sleep, along with his guards. With her are his daughters, who are there to do whatever Medea orders them to. They bring their father to a couch and stand on either side awaiting further instructions from the witchy woman. "What are you waiting for?" Medea exclaims as they look at her. "Take these swords, drain his blood. Drain out the old blood so that I may fill his veins with new, fresh, young blood. Your father's life depends on you now. If you love him, then prove that you have his best interests at heart, that you're trying to restore his youth. Do this for your father. Use these blades to get rid of his old age." And they do. This is all it takes for the daughters, who are thinking they're doing everything in their power to extend their father's life, to bring their blades down upon their father. They hack away at his body at random, frantically, out of love. Peleus, blood pouring from so many wounds on his body, wakes up and tries to raise himself from the couch, but his skin is half shredded, pieces falling from his body as he moves. He yells out, asking his daughters desperately what they're doing. Why are they taking their own father's life? What has led them to this? The women stop. They hesitate, and Peleus would have said more if Medea hadn't scooped up what was left of his shredded body and tossed him into the boiling vat of potion. Of course, Medea isn't rejuvenating Peleus. She isn't restoring his youth. She's just killing him in one of the more troubling ways one can imagine. She's just convinced his daughters to stab him wildly, blindly, before plunging his half-dead, pleading body into a boiling vat of soup. According to Ovid, Medea escapes her fate there in Iolcus by once again utilizing her incredibly cool and badass chariot pulled by winged dragons. In an instant, they've appeared and she's climbed aboard before either of the daughters can even fully comprehend what's just happened. Before they've fully taken it all in, Medea has flown off on her chariot, which brings her to the city of Corinth. But that doesn't account for Jason arriving in Corinth, too. Maybe he just followed her once he knew the deed was done. Other versions simply have Medea and Jason being expelled from Iolcus, forced to flee the city for what's been done, and making their way to Corinth together. However it happens, the pair do end up in Corinth, where, I imagine, they're purified of this sin and can continue their lives in relative normality for a while. Medea and Jason have two children, two sons, and they're happy, again, for a time. Eventually, though, Jason grows bored of his foreign barbarian wife. He grows tired of his life with her, his station as not a prince as he was in Iolcus, but as a regular man married to a foreign woman who isn't even respected as a true Greek. A woman who speaks her Greek with an accent, who has odd, oftentimes troubling customs. Customs that were once Jason's saving grace. Customs, magic that kept him alive when he would have died so many times. But once those customs, that magic, aren't keeping Jason alive or killing his enemies, they become annoying. It becomes a source of embarrassment, added to by her general foreign tendencies. Medea's from the East, so she likely doesn't even look like the Greeks. She has dark skin, she's Middle Eastern, Asian in her complexion. And Lord knows how the Western world takes to foreigners with different skin tones. They were then, as many are now, not particularly cool with people who looked different. Or really, they just often felt themselves superior, you know. It's something that we can't ever forget when discussing the story of Medea, both with how she was treated in the story and how her story has been retold in the many different versions and treatments. In Corinth, this all comes to a head as her shitty husband in all his shittiness becomes annoyed with his so-called barbarian wife. Enter Glauca, a young, pretty princess who is, most importantly, Greek. But that's for next time. Now for the inaugural segment of Things the Western World Didn't Do First. As you might imagine, I'm starting this segment to begin detailing things that are often attributed to the ancient Greeks or the ancient Romans as some sort of so-called proof that these cultures, and by extension the so-called Western world, is somehow superior or gave us the things we deem important today. This idea that we as humans wouldn't be where we are today without them, because that's some dark shit. And we're starting simple with writing the Greek alphabet, and by extension, writing and recording generally. Sure, this isn't necessarily something people attribute to the Greeks having done first. We all know about the Egyptians and their hieroglyphs. I hope we all know about the Mesopotamians, too. But still, the civility involved with writing and literature, even just written records, is often associated with the ancient Greeks. And sure, they wrote some awesome things. I do love myself some Homer and Euripides and oh so much more. But the ancient Greek alphabet is typically understood to have been introduced or influenced by the Phoenician alphabet. Phoenicia was the ancient civilization with their main city in Byblos and then Tyre, what is now Lebanon. That's right, not so Western and definitely not white. The Phoenicians traded with the Greeks, and it said their alphabet came over through those interactions. The Phoenician alphabet is the oldest confirmed alphabet. The Greeks understood this adoption of the alphabet through the myth of Cadmus, who came over from Phoenicia while searching for his sister, Europa, who was, as you know, kidnapped by Zeus in the form of a bull. Cadmus, after searching in vain for Europa, made Greece his home by founding the city of Thebes, and doing so, introduced the Phoenician alphabet to the Greek mainland. The Greeks then created their own alphabet based on the Phoenician. According to Herodotus, even, he attributes Cadmus as the person who brought over the Phoenician alphabet to the Greeks. It's not likely that Cadmus actually existed, but even Herodotus believed he did between 1600 and 2000 BCE. From the Greek alphabet comes Old Italic, used by the Etruscans, which eventually becomes Latin, which eventually becomes, well, French, Italian, Spanish, all the Romantic languages. Oh, and Cyrillic comes from ancient Greek, too, and sure, maybe the English language has some other roots in addition to Latin, but the alphabet, well, the alphabet is Latin. What I'm saying is basically all Western alphabets came from the Phoenician. Next time on Things the Western World Didn't Do First, literature. Oh, nerds. Thank you all for listening. I won't lie, I'm pretty excited to keep up with this new segment. I hope you like it. As I mentioned recently, there's a lot of talk of the ancient Greeks and Romans as so-called proof of white superiority that is so troubling and so gross. And so I'm going to continue to use this little platform to take down that nonsense while still loving on the ancient Greeks and Romans for what they were. Fascinating, influential, but not all-important or all-powerful. They gave us a lot, but they did not give us everything. Well, you're all wonderful. Thank you all for the magnificent and awesome support you give me just by listening to the podcast or by interacting on social media or through Patreon. Everything you do gives me life, and I honestly can't believe this has grown like it has. I can't believe I get to do this and have so many awesome people listen and enjoy it and learn from it. It's seriously the coolest thing that's ever happened to me, and with any luck, it will soon be a full-time gig along with writing those books of mine. I recently finally finished writing the novel. It still needs to be edited and the like, but the story is done, and for me, that's enormous. I hope to start submitting to agents soon, and with any luck, I'll have a deal to announce before too long so that you can all read it. Fingers crossed. Anyway, that's all. Just thanks. You're cool. I'm Liv, and I love this shit.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.